You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's books and comics show dedicated to Star Trek. I am but one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is the wonderful and amazing Jonathan Cohn.
Thank you. I'm very interested in where the discussion goes on this book today.
I am as well. Neither of us have read this, and we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Let's not spoil it here. And what I'll do first is tell everyone how to contact the show. You can find all of our shows at trek.fm, and from there you can send us emails and get in contact with the hosts and everything. Follow the network on X and Instagram at trek.fm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, you can join our listeners only discussion group, the Babel Conference. Just type in B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field and it'll come right up. There's lots of conversations happening in there on various shows. So definitely find us there. And similarly, you can find the show on Goodreads. Just go to the Goodreads groups and look up Literary Treks and you'll find us there. You can look at our bookshelves of all the books we've talked about and even sometimes what's coming up. So that'll be fun. Also, if you are so inclined, we would love your support in a monetary fashion to keep these shows coming to you. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm and you can become a financial supporter of the network. It takes a lot of money to put these shows together and put them out there for everybody. So any amount that you can give is so much appreciated. And if you're so inclined and have a favorite show, like, I don't know, Literary Treks, or any of our shows, you could become an associate producer like myself and Craig Rozier. And last but not least, wherever you find your podcasts, if you could give us a star rating and a written review, that does so much good for us. It helps people find the show. It helps us know who's listening and also what you think about it. And without further ado, Jonathan, we've got not one, but two new books that we can talk about at this time.
Interesting. The first one is a new Strange New Worlds novel, and this is coming from David Mack. Yes, it's a David Mack Strange New Worlds novel titled Ring of Fire. It is the Simon & Schuster website shows a release date for August 26th, 2025. So I find this interesting first because this is the third Strange New Worlds novel in a row. We had Asylum in November 24. In March or April, we have April. Yeah. Well, around there, spring, we have the next Strange New Worlds towards the night with James Swallow writing. And then this is the next announced book. Coming out in August, or not announced, but like one that we know is coming in August for Strange New Worlds, Ring of Fire, from David Mack. And I'm really curious, because when was the last time we had three in a row from a series?
Maybe Discovery, but even then
like, I think they split them up.
Picard.
Yeah.
And
an original series, or even Voyager. Like,
Yeah, I mean, there's been all sorts of, and it might... I'm kind of wondering if it's just because, you know, Lower Decks, as we record this, I believe their series finale is tomorrow, I believe, or it's around now. And so currently I believe that makes Strange New Worlds the only currently running Star Trek show and are currently being produced even. And so I have a feeling that there's just a lot of hype around that, and they're trying to build the hype and keep the tie-ins coming with the show that's still going to continue on.
That makes sense. But at the same time, I mean, thinking back to the 90s, in, you know, they still, even when Next Gen went off the air, they still produced Next Gen books. When TOS, I mean, they just released a TOS book recently. So, like, that's just, it's very curious, the planning at Simon & Schuster. I'd really like to get a discussion with the editors about why a lot of those decision makings are happening. I mean, if, you know, if it makes sense for the business, you know, go for it. Do the Strange New Worlds books. I'm just really curious.
We did have Dayton Ward's Next Generation novel, Pliable Truths, fairly recently in 2024. And yeah, I just wonder, is there any more plans, you know, in interspersed with these? Like, are we going to find out another book? Because, you know, Asylum got announced, I think, after James Swallow's book, maybe?
It got announced first. No, we got the cover. We got the cover for Toward the Night
first. We got the cover. That's right.
I don't believe we've ever had the announcements out of order. I've been following Star Trek books since about 2018, and ever since, which we've slowed down since then. But generally, we get the books announced generally in release order. So we should... we shouldn't have anything else in the interim. I'd be shocked if it's like, oh, in June we actually have another Star Trek book that was not announced. It's like, nah, they want to get the pre-orders started. So
yeah, that's a good point. I was wishful thinking that maybe, you know, July or, you know, June or July of next year we'd get something else, but you know, there's still room at the end of 2025 for another.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, I love the Strange New Worlds books, but yeah, it's And if that was not strange, you know, I actually wouldn't also be surprised if it was Section 31, because they got the movie coming out this January.
That's why, like, if, you know, I would have expected if the movie's coming out in January, maybe February, you have a Section 31, you know, prequel movie or something. And I mean, it's a Georgiou movie about Section 31. You already have an author who has done a Georgiou Section 31 novel. Why aren't you bringing back John to do a book related to it? Maybe he's too busy with Batman, which might be true, but still, the authors are available. So
yeah.
I don't know
why.
We want
the books. We'll be, as long as they keep pumping them out, we'll keep buying them and reading them.
Yeah. So I'm very curious. But that's thankfully not the only book. It's the only novel announced.
True.
But it's not the only book.
Now, the other one that we've got, John Tenuto actually just made the official announcement on his Facebook page for his new book for Titan, which he's co-written with his wife again, Maria Jose Tenuto. And that book is Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, The Making of the Classic Film. And, you know, Titan has this line of like coffee table books, and I've got a handful on my shelf, and, they're pretty great books, you know, like we've had a First Contact one, you know, and the Tenutos have written Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, The Making of the Classic Film. Yeah. So with the announcement of the Star Trek III one, I think that's super cool. And now on my Santa Claus wish list at the end of this year of 2024, I'm hoping about a year from now we get an announcement for Star Trek IV, The Voyage.
Yeah, I mean, it only makes sense for them to do the full three, because 2, 3, 4 are basically a trilogy for Star Trek. And, you know, I mean, if you think about it from the novel's perspective, Vonda McIntyre did those three novelizations herself. Keep it consistent doing 2, 3, 4.
Exactly.
Which, I love... Star Trek III, Search for Spock. I think it's one of the most underrated Star Trek films. You know, everybody loves 2, 4, 6, and 8. And everybody hates on 5, and 10, and 9. But like, 3 is one of those that like, it just kind of gets forgotten, but I love it.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. And I think, you know, in the hands of the Tenutos, I think we're in for a good book. You know, the Wrath of Khan one that they did was just really interesting, and it's just a fun, you know, look back at the movie, you know, kind of a making of perspective. And I think that, you know, doing this next one, I mean, there's so much about Star Trek III that, you know, it was Leonard Nimoy's first time directing a Star Trek film. And I think the original intent was to not have Spock in it. So I'm hoping that it like has, I mean, then they called it the search for Spock. So, you know, Spock's going to show up. But yeah, but, just to, you know, it'd be really kind of cool to revisit that movie again and then, you know, look at the making of it. And, you know, kind of reinvigorate some life or, you know, re-inject some life into that movie that, yeah, a lot of people, I think, forget about sometimes. And the books are pretty expensive. You know, I think they're like $50 usually a pop, but yeah, but you know, they're, you know, like I said, they're really good quality, you know, big books, a lot of pictures in them. And you know, they're written by fans, you know, so it's, you know, something that I think, you know, a lot of fans are going to really enjoy going through.
Hopefully maybe we can make this one of our, I think it's coming September.
Well, I forgot to put that on there, but
it's fall that it's coming.
Yeah.
So maybe we can make that whenever month it releases our,
yeah, our, that'll podcast. Be nice. And less. And when the Star Trek 2 book came out, Matthew and I did talk to the Tenutos on Literary Treks about it. I should have done a little research and found out what episode that was if people want to go back and listen to it. But when we get back around to it, well, we'll tell people how to go back and they can listen to Literary Treks in order with these books too.
Yeah.
Well, that's not all we've got today. We've got a lot of comics that we're going to catch up on here real quick. I think kind of been going back and forth. We've gone kind of some times without just talking about comics at all, but then like the comics all kind of pile up, mm-hmm. and then we have to do these like big comic catch up. And then it's like, well, why don't we just go back to doing like one comic or, you know, like all the comics mm-hmm. that came out since we last recorded. But with the ongoing series that they have, each of those series seem to be kind of broken down into kind of little mini series or mini arcs, mm-hmm. you know, five or six parts.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, what would be, you know, fun for us or, you know, a little easier for us, because like when they stretch out for too long, then it's like, I don't even remember what was it three issues ago or anything. So I think, you know, as we go and they're pumping out so many of these comics, it seems like every month that I think we'll have plenty to talk about. But, you know, to start us off, we left off the Star Trek ongoing.
Yeah.
I shouldn't call it that because that was a previous run, but just the Star Trek line of comics. The last one we talked about was issue 18, and I can't remember off the top of my head what was the conclusion of that one, but we're now into issues 19 through 24, which is called Pleroma, and that's a 6-issue arc of stories. And where we kind of pick up with this one is T'Lir, who's a kind of the Vulcan of the crew. We actually find out that they're actually an Organian incorporated into Vulcan at birth, and they explain that the rest of their species is inside the Organian species from Errand of Mercy, mm-hmm. I think, the original series, you know, the Organian Peace Treaty. They're in like a pocket dimension, which they're calling the Pleroma, which is like the hardest word to say three times fast. And Sisko takes his ship, the Theseus, to Utopia Planitia at Mars to refit so that they can go save the Organians. And this, I don't know, this is just kind of like kind of a cool storyline, I think, like revisiting the Organians, who we don't ever see or talk to, you know, or anything in the books. Like, yeah, we just don't get them anymore.
Yeah, we got the Organians there. Pleroma itself was just interesting because it's basically they go into like this almost like other dimension, and Beverly gets all, you know, really interested in it because she thinks that the Travelers are there and that Wesley is there, and we do get to reunite with Wesley in the comic for one issue. He shows up for just one issue, and it's all about him, and then that issue ends, and he's kind of like, he reunites with Mom and that's it. And then so he leaves, and then they have this like council where they're like It's different random people. Like there's one person from Roman mythology, and there was one person that was like a there's a Tholian in there, and the entity from this was a weird thing. The entity from the caretaker from Voyager was present as well. It wasn't corporeal. It was just, there. Anyway, they were all present, and the supervisor was Kor Sung from Picard season one.
She was from Picard season
two. Really?
With the one with Q. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
she was the one in the past that that Wesley took.
Yes. Yeah. To that's right. That's right. Yeah. She's in there. Lore shows up and messes up everything there and
of course
basically destroys Pleroma. No, Plemora. Yeah. Pleroma.
Pleroma.
Whatever.
That's why it's a comic. Yeah.
It destroys that alternate reality and sends the Theseus to fluidic space. And as soon as they landed in fluidic space, I was like, yes, Species 8472. I love this. And that's where it ended.
To be continued.
And I was like, no.
Yeah. Well, that's one of these things like, this was an interesting little arc because it, keeps the theme of gods going throughout, which is what we've gotten through the whole thing. It's kind of how Sisko came back. He's still kind of they're trying to lure him back into the celestial temple to mm-hmm. be with the prophets and everything. Yep. So it's kind of fun. Like, Charlie Evans from the episode Charlie X was, one of these beings at this council of gods or whatever. I don't know. It was kind of a fun one, and I'm with you. Like when it ended by ending up in fluidic space, I'm actually kind of looking forward to getting into the next little arc of this series to see where they go and what we do with that. Says, I mean, the Borg are going to show up. What are we going to do in fluidic space, mm-hmm. or where's this going to go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the Defiant series that we're following, issues 12 through 16, which is Hell is Only a Word, parts 1 through 5, where the crew of the Defiant has apparently become bounty hunters.
Yeah.
I must have missed a comic there. But
pretty much, yes.
And go to this Starbase 99, and there is a parasite that infects B'Elanna. And then while they're trying to get it out of B'Elanna, they're also trying to figure out where it is, and they figure out that there's a big wormhole. Not wormhole. That's not the right word. Like gate.
I'm kind of looking at my notes here too. Like it's been a little
something that leads to the parasite dimension. Which Spock is like, what are you doing, buddy? Why are you opening it? Come on, man. You're better than this. Spock opens it, and so they're trying to fight against it, which I loved the fighting in this one. It's just Worf and Ro and B'Elanna, that's a great pairing because they just want to tear everything up. And they're just, they just want to fight everything. So
yeah,
I really like that.
And I liked bringing back those parasites from TNG's conspiracy. I think we actually got them in the, DS9 relaunch novels. I think they were somehow connected to the Trill. If I remember correctly.
I don't remember that, but maybe they were. It's been a while since I read those.
Yeah, it's been a while, so maybe our listeners can tell us. But, it's always fun to see them brought back because they're such an interesting villain or, whatever for the, for our people. I thought that was fun. And, I mean, of course, we know that B'Elanna's not going to die. And what's funny, though, is that Hugh has to
assimilate
her to basically save her life, which
I'm sure she appreciated. And Ro, every issue, Ro stops him and is like, you can reverse this, right? And he's like, yes.
Yeah.
And she's like, you can reverse this, right? He's like, yes. And by the third time, I was like, yes, we got it, Ro. We know. He can reverse it.
Yeah. And I think there's the Orion Nymeira.
Yeah,
I don't remember exactly what happened to her. My note just says, let's just say we probably won't see her again.
She gets trapped for a while. So what happens is the only way to cut off the parasites is to blow them up, blow up the portal from
their side.
So she takes the portal thing over to their side and then blows it up. It's assumed if she survived, she's stuck over there. But I don't think she survived because she pretty much blew up. But it was weird because, I didn't remember if we'd met her before. So I'm seeing her in this. So I was like, okay, interesting character. And then she's dead. And I'm like, all right, well,
yeah,
that's over.
Well, she's one of those characters that I feel like, I don't know that they tried to develop her some. Like, we got to see some of her time on, kind of flashbacks to her time growing up. And, at the... I think she was in the Orion Syndicate or something, but it was like she didn't even get a name for the first several issues, and I never really gelled with her character just because she was left a little too mysterious for too long, and so I wasn't totally. It'd be interesting to see her come back. I mean, if everybody in Star Trek eventually comes back,
right.
But it'll be interesting to see where we go without her because there's kind of a lot of characters, and so kind of getting rid of some from time to time is not bad. And I mean, the next time we catch up with the Defiant comics, the cliffhanger that it left us on this time was Sela has taken over the Defiant, and her father shows up and. Now what's going to happen. And, cause I think we got to see some flashbacks from her time. I think even with her father is she going to try to win his approval? Is she going to fight him? Is she going to become one of the regular crew of a Defiant? Cause we had Lore for a while, but then he left, he took, stole Data and went off back over to the Star Trek series.
Yep.
And, he's still a villain. So is Sela still going to be a villain or is, we're going to see some, no pun intended, but now I'm going to and fully intend some redemption for her to those of you that's an episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, that she appeared in, I think. I think, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where they take both of these series.
I have read the first three issues of the next part of Defiant.
The next one.
Because I didn't realize we were stopping. And all I'll say is that it's weird, but there is another Species 8472 reference. It's not a major thing, but you will know it when you see it.
Awesome. I was actually kind of thinking about that, too, with the conspiracy parasites. And that kind of other dimension that Nymeira went to is if that's somehow going to connect to like fluidic space and find out that they're actually connected somehow to 8472. But
I would not be opposed to getting a physical bind up of issues 1 through 24 or issues 1 through 12, of these, if they're out or if they're going to come out, because
I'm pretty sure
reading them as they are, just reading them individually as an EEP thing just is messing with my brain. It's just like, I'm just like always trying to remember.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try that.
And I know they, I think Dan Gunther, previous host of Literary Treks, and he's got the Treklit.net, I think is where he does his reviews. But he'll usually, it looks like, review the comics as the bind-ups of the... And I don't know if they do them as the mini series or if they like kind of do two or like the mini arcs.
Or
if they do them or multiples at a time. But I'm pretty sure they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume physically. But yeah, I agree. It is kind of tough when you're trying to follow along and they come out like one a month and it's and for only like 20 pages or whatever they are. It's hard to remember. Like they put a lot in these stories, but they kind of go out of my brain pretty quick.
To put a similar comparison, we were talking off camera about this, but one of my favorite authors, Brandon Sanderson, before his epic huge Stormlight books, he puts the preview chapters out once a week for like 10, 15 weeks. And so you can read each chapter as it comes out, and you've read, you know, the first 100 pages, 150 pages of the book. Now, it's not that much when his books are
10%.
10%, but the books are 1,300 pages long. But still, you can start reading the book ahead of time. But I never do that. Because I'm like, look, I want to read it all at once so that I don't have to break it up or get confused and stuff. So,
yeah. Well, and like, and that is kind of one of the things about these comics that they do is the very first page, like the title page.
I do like that.
Yeah, it has like a recap. Yeah. Sometimes, like, on actually quite a few of them, I feel like go back a little too far. Yeah. Like, we talk, like, they're still talking about, like, the Day of Blood.
Right. And,
like, boy, that was a while ago. So last year. Yeah. You know, whatever. Yeah. Like, but it is helpful to kind of just remember where we're at, even if I am reading them in quick succession, just to kind of like get a real brief synopsis of what I just read. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot happening in these comics. There's, you know, a lot to look at, a lot to read. And, you know, I've kind of, I wouldn't ever say I've discounted comic books as like a literary form, but like, it's never been totally my jam. And you do kind of have to teach yourself how to read them so that you get the most out of them.
Yeah.
And so, I do have some appreciation for the people that are really, really into comic books and, you know, go through a lot of them. Cause you know, it does take some work. Even if it's 20 pages, it still takes a little while to get through it and get everything in your brain. But, well, I think, we'll pause there on the comics. Like, I know we still haven't talked about Star Trek 500, which was kind of their big one shot, once they hit the 500th issue, but, you know, I think next time we talk, we'll definitely talk about that one. I'm not sure if these mini arcs in Star Trek or Defiant will have completed an arc yet. So we may not talk about them
quite yet
next time. But I think there is another, like, so there's Star Trek 500. There might be another one shot that recently came out.
We did the Celebrations one last time.
We did Celebrations. And I think there was the annual last time too, but. But we'll check, and we'll have something to talk about next time. We'll see. But, yeah, in the meantime, I guess we should finally, you know, open this Pandora's box.
I oppose that pun on the principle of it.
Well, we are here to talk about Star Trek, the Pandora Principle, which was book number 49 in the Star Trek numbered series, came out back in I think April of 1990. So we're going way back here, and this is by Carolyn Clouse, one-time Star Trek author. In fact,
one-time author. I googled I tried to find she doesn't have a fantastic fiction page on Goodreads. Her only book is the Pandora Principle. And I was like, maybe if I like Google search her, there will be like a short story here or a novella here or even, you know, a novel separately. Literally every Google result was just for this book. It was just the only thing in her bibliography. So I always talk about like when I can 100% an author's bibliography and be like, I've read all their books. We've read all of Carolyn Clouse's books. So
oh, that's funny. I hadn't thought of it like that, but yes, that's true. I actually do wonder. Oh no, this is. I was going to say, I wonder if this was like a pseudonym that she chose, because I was reading on another blog somebody that reviewed this book, and they talked about, and maybe this is talked about in the Voyages of the Imagination book, but this book went through the literary equivalent of development hell, you know, which is what movies go through.
Right.
And they sit for years.
Yeah.
I guess she wrote this book and it sat for like it. She wrote it in like 1985 and it sat until 1990.
Wow.
Just, I don't know if it was going through revisions. Like I know that there was, you know, changes with the editor and stuff. But if you think about the fact that this was actually written before Star Trek IV,
right,
which Savick was really not in. I mean, she appeared in very briefly at the beginning and I think at the very end too, but like there's a 5-year gap of other stuff happening and even just the world changing too, you know, and literary tastes changing.
I can guess what happened. because I do know that on the film side, when they were working on the original scripts for Six, which would come out in 91, but they were working on it for quite a while, when they were working on the scripts for Undiscovered Country, the original plan was to have Savick be the Vulcan that's on the ship that betrays them and does all that stuff. And in the early drafts of the script, that was the plan. And I don't remember if it was Robin that said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to turn evil, or whether it was someone else in the writing team, or if it was
Nicholas Meyer.
Nicholas Meyer. I don't know who decided not to do that, but they eventually decided not to do that. And, you know, they knew Robin wasn't coming back. So the gal that they got for, I forgot the character's
name. For Valeris.
Valeris, yeah, for Valeris, was originally signed, I believe, to be Savick doing Stevel stuff, and then they rewrote it, and now she's Valeris originally. So I could guess that this book was stuck because they knew they were doing something with Savick, or they were planning to do something with Savick, and by the time that they said, all right, we're not actually going to make her turn evil, was probably in 89 when they were writing the script and stuff. And so they said, all right, we're not turning her evil. You can release the book finally. That's my, I mean, I don't know, but that's my guess.
No, that's a good thought, just because like that, I mean, that happens today, you know, the authors that we talk to, and if there's a continuing series, like they have to be careful. I mean, even like the whole literary universe in the 24th century, they had to close down with the Coda books when Star Trek Picard was announced, just so that they weren't stepping on toes or doing something that they knew was going to get overwritten by the screen. So, I buy your theory.
Oh, thank you.
but I mean, you know, let's just say this, and I'm not going to give final thoughts already, but I think that just that gap doesn't really bode well, I think, for the book. And I don't think it would for anything, just because like there are things in this book that don't. Well, there's some things that just don't come to fruition at all. There's some stuff that happens at the very beginning of the book that then just is never mentioned again. And it seems like kind of a Chekhov's gun kind of situation. Yep. Like, and then it just never happens. And then there's other things that feel like, and I know we've talked about this with some other books where there, it almost seems like sometimes, and I'll just get into this part now, like with Kirk.
Yep.
You know, like, let's just get him out of the way, because that's what they did in the book. They just kind of got him out of the way. And it was weird, because I'm fine. You know, like, if they want to have a Star Trek book without Kirk being really involved, I mean, that's fine. That's how we get our other characters involved. And I know that he's really the face of the original series. But when you want to focus on other characters like Spock, and in this case, Savick, Kirk doesn't really fit into that story. But there's some... The whole Kirk storyline in this book, with him just being locked in the vault at Starfleet headquarters, was just he didn't add anything to the story. And I wish they would have just had some reason. He got sick. I don't know, like at the beginning of the book where he's just out of commission.
Yeah, I had the same problem. My general problem with the book is that I think that Carolyn Close tried to do too much. I think that she had so many ideas, so many plans, and she should have honed in the plan. And one of those things in there was the idea, because you have you have the whole, you know, colony of Vulcans that produce the hybrids. You have the ship that has this weird cloaking technology. You have the box, the Pandora's box, that has the virus that sucks up oxygen. You have the treasure on the planet.
I totally forgotten about until the very end.
So you have all these ideas, and I felt like the oxygen weapon should have been a different thing. Like, that should have been, if it was going to be in the book, it should have been the whole crux of the book. And instead, it wasn't. It felt like it was there specifically to get Kirk out of the way. And even then, his character just seemed off in the book. Spock felt like Spock to me. Scotty and McCoy felt like Scotty and McCoy to me. So, like, the other characters, even Uhura seemed like Uhura. But Kirk, he just felt Like, he got angry too easy, and he dialed it up too fast whenever anything happened. And I was like, it just didn't feel like Kirk.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny, because the whole reason he ends up getting locked in the vault in the first place, and even here again, like, I feel like the easy out for them would have been that, so he was essentially trying to do what you'd expect a young Kirk to do, and basically go, he was in the vault because he was like changing his orders. Mm-hmm. You know, Admiral Nagura was like gonna basically put him behind a desk again because he had his fun after Star Trek the motion picture. Right. And it was time to put him behind a desk again and, you know, make him an admiral again. Because this is between, I think this is
between one and two.
Four, yeah, this is like 4 years before two, I guess. Because mm-hmm. Savick is just like a brand new cadet, but you know, so Kirk's trying to be sneaky and eventually has to come clean about it and really doesn't get in much trouble. But I guess when he comes clean, it's kind of in the middle of the crisis. But like, Kirk's original reason for going on the vault was to change his orders, and I almost wish that like he had just beam down to Starfleet headquarters to have a meeting with Nagura to kind of convince him not to put him behind a desk. But in the meantime, some crisis happens and Spock has to, you know, like maybe Kirk gets grounded, but then Spock's mm-hmm. like, I got to go take the ship and do this mission because we have to, you know, and then
it would have been just, it would be funnier if Spock took the ship off on his own and Kirk's like, what? Yeah. You just took the ship? Like, in this, he's kind of like,
Enterprise?
You're stealing the Enterprise? Exactly. Like, at this point, he's kind of okay with it. He's frustrated. Yeah. He's not on it, but he, like, gets it. But it would have been so much better if he was like, you're leaving without me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it was just, it's kind of unfortunate because that took up a lot of pages, a lot of time focus, because they, and that's where I feel like there's probably an editor stepping in going, you got to put Kirk in the book. Mm-hmm. Just sprinkle him throughout. And I feel like that just every time I got to Kirk, I was like
exactly.
get on with it. Yeah.
And I feel the same way. And I feel like that's because he's the character that's most incorrect. Also, I think there's another character that I think Karen Close didn't nail, but he's the character that felt most off. And so I think she just wasn't as comfortable with him. I personally loved the first chapter. Loved it. I was so excited. I was like, you got the Klingons having this whole big discussion about these hybrid children and what to do with them. And this discussion of, do we raise them on our ships? Do we raise them on the planet? Do we send them over to the Federation? Like, how do we do that? And there's this great philosophical discussion. And Spock just has, you know, is very opinionated, and he ends up convincing them, yeah, you need to keep them. And then he's like, all right, but you get to take care of the kids. And Spock's like, hang on, I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah.
And so Spock ends up becoming kind of like the ward, I guess, not the dad. He's not a father to Savick, but he becomes like her teacher / mentor of her life. And I was so excited. Because I was like, okay, so now we're going to follow their lives. We're going to see how Spock was as a pseudo father figure. We're going to see, and then nope, it just skipped ahead. Yeah, she's already an adult. And I was like, okay, why'd you set me up such an awesome premise and then not deliver that?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and Spock did agree to take her on pretty quick. Because the other Vulcans, like in this council or whatever, that, you know, when they're standing on Helgard, you know, it's like they're standing in a circle trying to decide what to do. Because I feel like he kind of gets into it with his father at some point.
Yeah, he does. Like, yeah, his father, Sarek, is there.
Even that was good. But then, yeah, they're like, okay, well, you have to take her. And he's at first he's like, what? And he's like, all right, I can do this. Yeah. You know, and it was just like, well, that seemed
abrupt.
That seemed abrupt, yeah. But
yeah, it was.
But I think, you know, I mentioned this to you beforehand. I loved Carolyn Close's prose.
And
her writing is really good and really engaging. Yeah, that first chapter, I mean, you're kind of in there. You're like, what is happening? What's going on? Because then Spock's getting attacked by this mm-hmm. child. He knows it's a child, but he can't see them. He can't, you know, he can't find them. But then he gets saved by this, like,
what, preteen, teenage mm-hmm. girl or whatever, you know, obviously turns out to be Savick. And but these kids are like savages, they're feral kids, basically. Mm-hmm. And just like kind of this mystery of who these kids are and what they're like, what happened and everything. Like, you know, you just, yeah, you get hooked like right away. And yeah, it was kind of unfortunate that all of a sudden, yeah, we just fast forward to, was it 6 years later or something yeah. like that? Because she's like, you know, just, you know, she's probably, I feel like she was a little young when she started the academy, but, you know, still like, even at that point, she was very young. But that was that kind of sucked. And, and unfortunately, I really did not like much of the stuff that we did get from their early encounters, the way she talked.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you've seen Fifth Element.
I have not.
Okay. The character that Mila Jovovich plays, Lilu, that's almost how she talks. And so that's all I could hear in my head was, you know, the orange haired character from The Fifth Element.
And this is where I feel very interesting about it, because if this is an original character, I kind of like what they did with her. Mm. But I didn't like that it was Savick. Because, you know, from a, you were talking about the pros, from a writing perspective, the journey that she takes Savick on from being the savage type, you know, unhinged teen to slowly being mentored by Spock to being this kind of aloof and kind of confused by humanity that she is later on. And then the anger that she has towards the end of the book, against those who, yeah. you know, wronged her, all of that makes sense. But what we get in the movies, and even what we got in like other projects, which there's not been much with Savick, but what yeah. else we've gotten with her, it's just the end product still didn't feel like it was Savick herself. Mm-hmm. And that's why she was the only other character, ironically, because it's for all its service, it's Savick and Spock's book. And yeah. But because we get Spock all the time, it's not as special that it's Spock's book, but it's Savick's book, which is rare. So if you're going to do a book about Savick, you got to stick the landing with it.
Yeah. 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 Because it didn't feel like the Savick at the end of this book, which is in her first year at the academy. Mm-hmm. Like she's not even all the way through her first year at the academy at this point. She's like, pretty early on at the academy. I don't feel like 4 years later when we see her in The Wrath of Khan, like just mm-hmm. out of the academy, that was such a put together, very Vulcan-like
yeah.
character. And I think even when they shot Star Trek II, I think it was Vonda McIntyre when she wrote the novelizations that came up with, and maybe it was, I think it was in Star Trek VI, I think they were going to bring the half Vulcan, half Romulan thing when they were mm-hmm. thinking about using Savick, but I don't remember if they, and maybe we'll get some of that in, and maybe we did get that in the Tenuto's Star Trek II book that we mentioned earlier in the news segment, but, you know, obviously the half Vulcan, half Romulan thing never made it to screen. Mm-hmm. But Vonda McIntyre and her novelizations really fleshed out. Like she's the one that came up with Helgard and that was the name of the planet that she came from and everything. And even I thought it was interesting in this book that the acknowledgments were at the very front of the book instead of the very end of the book, which also maybe should have said something about how this book was going to go. It's like, hey, let's read the thank yous first.
Well, I mean, quite a lot of books do the acknowledgments at the beginning.
Really? Oh, I feel like I'm always reading them at the very end, like right before about the author.
A lot. Well, for Star Trek, I think they usually do them at the end, but for like fantasy sci-fi, you usually get them at the front. So maybe that's why it didn't bother.
I didn't bother me,
but I just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
But, And so, you know, on a factual, you know, like on her backstory, like logically, a lot of this makes sense. It just didn't feel, you know, accurate to her story. But you know, we've talked about some negatives. I do have personally one positive that I love, and I haven't talked to you about this, so I don't know how you're going to feel about this. Cause I saw in the notes what you wrote about this, but, the character of Mr. Obo.
Oboe.
I loved Oboe. I thought it was hilarious. I literally had a smile. I was eating this. I was reading this while I was eating at a restaurant, and every time he came up, a smile came on my face when I was reading it, because he just cracks me up.
He is a funny little character, but he just, I wouldn't say I disliked Obo. I just feel like it wasn't used maybe to its fullest, because Obo didn't show up.
Until like midway
times.
Through.
Yeah, midway through, but then like very few times, I feel like, enough to establish Obo as a character, and one that hung out with, I think Harper, the character's name. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to know that it like could fix things, and we got to learn like lots of little things about it. I would have either wanted more or none at all, because then by the time you get to the end where, I mean, Obo effectively saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yep. I was worried that Obo was going to die, because like at that point I was invested enough. And I'm like, you better not kill Obo after all this. you know, so luckily Obo was an easy fix for Dr. McCoy. But I don't know. It was just it was a little distracting maybe. But like, and that's why I think like it, I almost wish it was like was it Kienzer, I think, from the newer Star Trek movies, that was like Scotty's like little sidekick in the newer Star Trek movies. I almost wished Obo was actually like a Starfleet, but maybe like some kind of just very unique character that like people just still weren't very familiar with, instead of like basically a stowaway, you know. It was just,
and I get that criticism. I did like that, at least from like a structure perspective, it made sense that she introduced him, and then he saved he fixed the ship, and Scotty gets all mad at him, and he's like, but look what I can do. And then he fixes it even more. And they're like, all right, just let him fix it. And 99.2% so by the time, 99.2%. And then by the time he saves the day by turning off the self-destruct, which at this point is getting a little bit overused in the Star Trek books. When he goes and saves the day with the self-destruct, sequence, he, you know, it's, we've established that, you know, it's within his power set that he can do that. So I at least thought that made sense. I would have liked more of him. My problem with him, if I, you know, I liked the character and I had a smile every time he was there. My problem is that he took away, like, if you only have X amount of time for the character of Harper, who is the character who is kind of with him, you should spend all of that time with Harper, with Savick, because I think Carolyn Close intended Harper to have like a romantic entanglement with Savick in this, and I was all for it. And I was like, I like how like nervous his character is, and I like how aloof Savick is, and like not picking up on his advances and stuff. And I was like, all right, we get a few times where stuff happened, but a lot of the time he's off doing stuff with Mr. Obo, and so his scenes aren't with Savick, and so by the end nothing happens. Nothing happens with him and Savick, and not that they had to, like, not like they had to end up together and live happily ever after, because that wouldn't make sense. But at least like there should have been more. Like that's where I felt that this is an example of her setting stuff up, because she was like, I want to include a romance, and then never goes anywhere. I want to include this, never goes anywhere, type thing.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that, because I agreed. Like, I think when he was on the bridge the first time she came out of the bridge, and he was clearly infatuated with her. And then later at some point, he kind of runs into her, and he's like, I think she's coming out of sick bay. And he's like, oh, I was hoping to talk to you. And she's like, how about right now? And he's like, oh, okay. you know, but I think even at that time he was looking for Obo. And that was kind of a thing too, where it's like, well, and this is where you were talking about earlier, kind of her trying to do too much. And it's like, well, either Harper needed to spend all of his time with Obo and focused on Obo as like his caretaker or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, you got on the ship. Oh my, I'm going to have to figure out how to explain this to Spock, or, you know, deal with this. And then like, oh no, where'd he go? Like, I don't know where Obo is. And just kind of a little bit of comic relief from time to time, but then to interject that stuff with Savick, it was, a little bit of a letdown by the end when Harper just kind of fades into the background again.
And in a longer book, you know, in a book that is word count longer, page count longer, or in a book that is in a series, if this was a part of a trilogy, you don't have to pay off everything like this. They didn't, like, if this was the first book in a trilogy, we don't need anything to come to fruition with the romance. That can just be the little tease there. If it's the first in a trilogy or a much longer book, you could add other scenes. But this is a pretty, in mass market, it's about 270 pages, which for Star Trek is pretty average, but it's not that small font size.
Yeah.
It's pretty decent sized font. So you only have very limited word count to get stuff done. So if you're going to include anything, you should do it really well.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things we've kind of touched on a little bit is, I call it the mystery boxes, because that's what these boxes really were that showed up. Halfway through, I feel like we got to page 100 when everything actually started happening.
Exactly.
In this book.
that was part of the
which
problem.
Which is rough.
Yeah.
Because, we got these mystery boxes, and they're really the MacGuffin of the story to kind of keep it moving. And I actually kind of liked them. I liked the idea that it's this weapon. And even as they get through the story and even kind of figure out this plot to, the Romulans know that humans will not be able to keep themselves from like looking in these pretty boxes, these Pandora's boxes really. It seems like an insurmountable mystery, there is zero oxygen. There's still air. Like there's nitrogen.
Like they make it seem like it's the end of the universe.
Yeah.
With like these. This gets out there, this kill everyone on the planet.
But it was a little, it was a little much, but it was kind of, I felt like the one thing that kept the story going, because it was what got Spock to have to take the Enterprise out and everything. What was tough was connecting it all back to Saavik. Yeah. And this is where I think the big struggle of any story with Saavik and her upbringing is, why did it have to be Helgard where these things were being manufactured? Like it didn't make a lot of sense, because we've got these Romulan Vulcan hybrid kids, and also this plot, like years long plot to destroy Earth or something. I don't know, but I thought the weapon itself and the whole plot itself was pretty good. I didn't think it had to, like, I don't think they had to go back to Helgard by the end of the story or anything like that.
Right. And really the reason they had to go back is because they want to give her closure on her past and stuff, and get her to kind of admit stuff and stuff. But there's one thing I touched on earlier, is the whole treasure with the stowaway pirate.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, that was the most egregious example of, where did that come from? What?
Yeah.
I was so confused. And again, page time that was devoted to that, which wasn't a lot, but it was like that page. If you only have 272 pages to write this book, take out that plot. Totally unnecessary. Totally weird. Just adding, like, now you have like a D plot in addition to the A, B, and C plot. And just take that out. Give it to Harper and Saavik. Or something.
Yeah.
Or give it to Saavik and Spock, even, and use that to be backstory time or something. Yeah. But that whole thing, and then that tied into the treasure had to do with a praetor on that was one of the Romulans. I think it was Tan was his name.
Something like that.
Yeah. And I was just like, I can't. That was my, what are we doing here moment.
Yeah. With it wasn't until, because when that character of Akrinar shows up, like this the
Akrinar, that's the guy,
he was an interesting character, and again, like, it's another character that would be, because I by the time he showed up, I'd completely forgotten about any treasure. I'd forgotten that we'd even seen the Praetor, because he had like one little blip, like maybe in early in the book, like chapter two, he had like one scene or something like that, but. You know, by the time Akrinar shows up, and especially once he, learns Saavik's name, and he's like, oh, it's like little cat or whatever it was, like the nickname or what Saavik means. I was like, oh, is this another one of those, one of the kids? But then they mentioned, no, he's full Romulan.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. So no, that's not it. And, you know, they'd already confiscated all the stuff. You know, Scotty's got his eye on like the whiskey or whatever it is that they find, which they give back to him. So that went nowhere. But,
yep.
And then at the end, when he reveals like, oh no, he shows Spock on his little ship when he's kind of leaving at the end, like, oh no, I've got all this gold and silver and all these Romulan gems. And it's like, what? You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, I echo you.
Exactly.
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from?
And so, and what's funny is I liked the character of Akarnar. He was mysterious, like you want a Romulan to be. He was helpful, but you kind of don't trust him. Or he's trying to help anyways, but nobody trusts him, you know. And but then at the end, it's just like, oh, he is literally just a smuggler that has a beef with this Praetor that just got caught up in this mess. Oh, okay, back to Helgard, you know. I don't know. Yeah. It was, yeah. Disjointed doesn't necessarily do enough justice.
To mm-hmm.
This is actually one of those books. I feel like I've read a lot of books lately that are kind of non-linear storytelling. This is one I feel like could have benefited some from some non-linear, some like flashbacks or something. Because
flashbacks with Spock raising
Savick.
Yeah.
And even some flashbacks to, well, no, yeah, just that. Cause like I'm with you. Like the opening, like the first couple chapters even, were great, like great setup for this stuff. And then, yeah, like if we'd have picked up with Savick coming to the Enterprise, you know, with the Enterprise dock there, you know, something, I don't know, something like that, where then they can kind of reminisce, they start their lessons and, you know, whatever, and then kind of get to see glimpses of her past. It might not have been so jarring sitting there for 100 pages reading her weird speech patterns that she had that were borderline offensive probably to some people. You know, it's, and like I said, I truly think that she did, like, that the author did a really good job of the actual writing. Like the structure, her sentences, like just the prose itself, I felt like was very good. Cause when I was reading, I mean, I was in it. I was, you know, really enjoying it. But every time I put the book down, which was very easy to do, unfortunately, I did have a hard time kind of deciding, like, I really need to get back into this. Like I told you, I literally finished reading this like right before we started recording. Cause I was just like, I don't know, like, I was, I guess, frustrated, maybe. It's not that I didn't like it as much as I was just frustrated by it.
Yeah. I, you know, this is, there's a very much a discussion in the literary space about whether or not you want your book to be all about the prose, or you want it to be all about the characters, about the plot. And the general consensus is we want it to be about the characters. If you have amazing character work, your plot doesn't have to be great.
Sure.
There are some authors where if your plot is so stellar, you don't need character work to be quite that good. I would say that fantasy sci-fi author Kevin J. Anderson, he doesn't always write great character work, but he writes amazing plots, so it makes up for it. Brandon Sanderson is able to do both. So he's able to do both. And then, you know, this book, characters mixed. Spock, I will admit, was really well done. Spock felt great in the book.
Spock was definitely Spock.
She had him good. The other characters, not like specifically the major characters like Savick and Kirk, just it fell flat for me. And then you say, all right, well, then your plot needs to be really solid. And the plot was all over the place. Yeah. So the only thing you have left is the individual writing style, which works again, as you're reading the book, if your sentence structure is really good, that works really well for you. But in terms of how you view the book down the line after you finished it, you're not normally thinking about how good that is afterwards.
Sure. Yeah. That's very true. And I don't know. I had a lot of high hopes for this. I think, like I mentioned to you before we recorded, like I didn't really know anything about this book before we before we picked it, except that it had Savick in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to call out Greg Cox for...
I'm not going to call him out, but Greg Cox's fault. Yeah,
not to name names. No, like when we talked to him about his book...
Lost to Eternity.
No, thank you. When we talked to Greg Cox about his book Lost to Eternity, he mentioned, when he was putting Savick into the story, he mentioned this book as, one of the very few books that have really done much with her mm-hmm. at all. And I think that I think that she appears in like the Vulcan's Heart and Vulcan's.
Oh, interesting.
Vulcan's Heart and Vulcan's Soul. Something. Soul. Or there's the Vulcan Soul trilogy, I think. And then there's. Mm-hmm. Anyway. But yeah, very few books. I hesitate to say he recommended it, but I know that he mentioned it,
right?
And which is what I think kind of made us think, oh, we should maybe read that one. And it's got decent reviews on Goodreads, but I don't know. As we kind of close out here, I'm really curious, where after our conversation today, where you landed on this one.
I didn't love it. I didn't think what? It was that. when I initially wrote my written review for it, I think it was a little bit, because again, I had just finished the book. And so I was mm-hmm. thinking a little bit more about the prose. But if we're talking about out of five, I'm going to have to give it a 2 out of 5. I know that's low, but I'm being honest.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I'm right there with you. This is a book I really wanted to like.
Yeah.
Like I said, when I was reading it, like I was kind of flying through it when I was reading it. Like it was very easy to get through, and we've talked about pluses and minuses, but yeah, this is a tough one to think like, ooh, I think I'd want to read that one again. I think I'd probably land around a 2 as well. I'm sure there's people out there, and if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my God, you guys missed the total point of the book, please let us know. Yes. I know that I would definitely not call this the worst Star Trek book ever.
And nope.
I think we've talked about some nope. other ones, but this is, definitely a lot better than some of those, but some people's least favorite book might be somebody else's favorite book. Mm. And I'd love to hear if our listeners have read this one. And
I'll say this. It's my favorite book by Carolyn Close.
Oh, wow. Very good. Well, we are, if you're listening to this as it comes out, we're at the end of a year. If you're listening to this, 3 years in the future in August, August of 2027 on a Thursday, let us know. But we're closing out a year here, and we've done a lot. We've had a few new releases this year. We've done a couple shorter series and everything, and we thought, hey, let's do a standalone. But I'm pretty excited because we're gonna start another series here.
Yeah, we are going to start the Gateways series. We are going to begin with book number one, and I am blanking on the title. Sorry. One Small Step by Susan Wright. This is a TOS story in the Gateway series, and the Gateway series follows, I think, the Challenger, TNG, DS9, Voyager.
New Frontier,
and then there's a crossover book.
Oh yeah, and then
at the end. But this one's a TOS, and I'm excited because I've never read this series before. I think you've read part of it, haven't you?
I've read all of them, but it was I don't remember when these books came out, but
it's like 2002, 2003.
Yeah, so I probably read them not long after they came out then. Mm. So in the early 2000s, but yeah. It's been a long time, and I remember very little.
Yeah.
Except I do. One thing I do remember is that every book ends on a cliffhanger that is not resolved until the 7th book, which is like short stories that basically resolve all the cliffhangers.
Interesting. So okay.
Thinking about this one, I was like, oh, do we read the first book and then read the first story?
That'd be so interesting.
It would be interesting, but I want to say, and I'm always a person, I want to read stuff in the publication order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know, like, even Chronicles of Narnia, you know, C.S. Lewis even said he does not want people to read them in publication order. He had a specific order he wanted them to be read in. But I was like, you know what, C.S. Lewis, I'm going to read the Chronicles of Narnia in the order that you wrote them. But with this, I don't think that there's much in the way of crossovers between each of the books themselves. But I think mm-hmm. once you get to the final book, there's enough that it's good to have read, I think, the other books before you get to the stories.
Yeah,
so,
we'll wait.
I figured, yeah, well, yeah, by the time we get to the seventh book, you know, like later in the year, like hopefully we'll remember the stories.
Yeah, we'll be like, what?
Yeah, what's happening?
But between the new releases that will be coming out, it'll probably be like next December that we finally
get
to book seven. But I'm excited to get to this.
Yeah. I'm excited to do these ones. It's been a long time, and it's nice just because it'll give us a chance to read. You know, we don't have the majority of what we have that has not been covered on Literary Treks is TOS, TNG, maybe some Deep Space Nine. I guess there's some Voyager too, but like beyond that, like I think the other hosts have covered everything. Enterprise.
Yeah,
I guess we've never really done New Frontier and stuff like that. But like what this does, I feel like it gives us a really good broad range of the different series throughout the year.
We get to see different authors, different mm-hmm. series, and different stories. So if a single one doesn't click, it's not like, oh, we got seven more books by this one author. Or we got seven more books that are following these characters that we don't like. It's like any book could have the potential to really hit well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm excited to get into that. But you know, until then, Jonathan, why don't you tell our listeners how they can follow you and get in touch with you?
You can find me on YouTube at Jonathan Cohn, and my Twitter handle is also at Jonathan Cohn. And you can find my Goodreads at Jonathan Cohn.
Nice. And you can find me on X and Instagram and Blue Sky at Knitting Trekkie. I'm very inactive on those, but I'm trying to get better. And you can also find me poking around. Oh, and on Letterboxd and Goodreads. I don't think I mentioned those either. Those are actually, funny enough, Goodreads is my biggest presence. And then maybe even Letterboxd, but also at Knitting Trekkie. And then on Facebook, you can find me poking around on the Babel Conference and other book groups and everything. So find me there. But thank you all for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.